Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 2:25 p.m. on Wednesday, January 26th. Before we begin, I want to thank Shannon McCain, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Nate Williams from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Price Tompkins, Representative Drummond, Representative Kirka, my Vice Chair, Representative Snyder, and myself, Representative Kleiman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is House Bill 183, Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission, sponsored by my office. This is the third hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. We have before us today a proposed committee substitute. Here to present the committee substitute is my staff, Lizzie Kubitz. Please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and you may begin your remarks.
Chairman, members of the House Judiciary Committee, for the record, my name is Lizzie Kubitz, and I'm staff to Representative Kleiman. Before we begin, I would like to provide further clarification related to the prior hearing's discussion about duty to design and implement a project for the purposes of studying risk factors related to criminal activity. This was a discussion that Representative Vance was curious about. This is not a new responsibility. In 2017, in passing Senate Bill 54, the legislature asked the commission to design a project to study the risk factors associated with criminal activity. The goal of this project was to provide information to the legislature to inform the legislature's policy and funding decisions related to primary crime prevention and improving primary crime prevention strategies in the state. With the sunset of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission on July 1st, 2021, the commission no longer has this responsibility. This responsibility now falls to the Alaska Judicial Council under AS 2220220. House Bill 183, as you see before you, version G, returns that duty to the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission, as seen in section 6 of version G of the bill. Should the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission sunset on June 30th, 2029, House Bill 183 ensures that the Alaska Judicial Council will again take up that responsibility as seen in Section 2 of the bill. So now moving on to the work draft you have, version G. Per the request of the reviser, version G accounts for the sunset and termination of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission and related statutory changes and enacts the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission based on the prior Alaska Criminal Justice Commission statutes. One other related and requested change is also included in version G. Section 4 is changed to specify that the victim's rights advocate on the commission be designated by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault after consultation with its member and partner organizations. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee about the committee substitute? Hearing and seeing none, can I have a motion to adopt the committee substitute as our working document?
I move that the House Judiciary Committee adopt the committee substitute to House Bill 183, version 32-LS0645-G, as our working document.
Any objections? Hearing and seeing none, the committee substitute has been adopted for House Bill 183. I'm going to go around the committee to see if anyone has questions. As usual, I'm going to limit questions to 1 minute per question. And I'll note for the committee, we have individuals online to answer questions. Actually, I want to note, apologies, Representative Eastman joined us at 2:27. Chris Curtis is here, a legislative auditor. Suzanne DiPietro, executive director of the Alaska Judicial Council, is on Teams, and Kelly Good, deputy commissioner, Department of Corrections, and the legislative liaison for the Department of Corrections, is with us in person. Any questions from the committee? Hearing and seeing none, I recognize Representative Vance has arrived just now at 2:30. I have a question for Ms. Good. So the committee had some questions at the last meeting about the Department of Corrections fiscal note, and I know I met with you since that time to ask some of the questions I had, and I won't ask the questions. I'll let you know. Tell us, what's the current position of the Department of Corrections on its fiscal note, and if you can provide some, tell us about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kelly Good, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Corrections. So I did watch the committee hearing last week, Mr. Chairman, and saw the questions regarding the fiscal note. Following that, I came up and met with you so that we could discuss the bill. When the department first analyzed the bill, we viewed some of the language in it to mean that we would need to conduct more data pulls, more data analysis. Upon talking to the chairman and the sponsor of the bill, he's assured us that the intent isn't for Department of Corrections to pull more data. It is should be, remain relatively static in the amount. If that's the case, then we can reflect that in a future fiscal note. Understanding that if it ever grows, we are kind of tapped out with our research team in Department of Corrections. We have a very small team. So if it were to ever grow, we'd have to revisit this. But as long as it stays static, Mr. Chairman, we will reflect that in a future fiscal note.
Any other questions for Ms. Good? Hearing and seeing none. That brings us to final comments. So I'll give members one opportunity to make comments, and as is my practice, I'll be calling on folks to ask if you have questions, since comments are limited to 3 minutes. And Representative Drummond, you're first up on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but I have no comments.
Representative Vance. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So there's a desire we've discussed in committee to take the Alaska Justice Commission and do what we can to, I think what was said, remove the politics that might be connected to that organization. And while I'm certainly one to minimize politics where we can, there's a component of that that is actually good. And the component of political participation and representation in these types of processes is what ensures that the public will have access to these organizations, to implement reforms if need be, to ensure that there's a voice that is from outside the professionals and the bureaucracy, if you want to call it that. And I see throughout the changes we're making to the commission, we are consistently removing politics, but we are more than that. We are removing the ability of the public through the governor when he makes appointments, through, say, if we're talking about legislators, legislators are are not, a part of this other than the previous minimal participation that they've had. And so I'm just looking and I'm seeing that when we take the votes away from certain members and we take the appointments away from certain elected members and then it goes to someone who is more part of the institution, shall we say, that then it can become a very much more insular organization. So that is a concern, and I think that's a consistent concern with the number of the changes that we're now making. And I also wanted to point out for the record that victims' rights is an important part of this project, but victims' rights is much more than domestic violence and sexual assault. We have homicide victims, we have assault victims, arson victims, robbery victims, victims of hit-and-run traffic accidents. And so to put a domestic violence and sexual assault organization in charge of selecting the victim's representative for all of our victims' rights organization, while those two categories of victims are important, I won't go so far as to say that we should exclude victims' rights organizations that service those other victims or limit their ability to serve on this commission as well. So it's with some concern that by choosing a particular type of victims' rights organization to be making those decisions, we may inadvertently find over time that sexual assault, domestic.
Representative Eastman, your 3-minute mark, if you could conclude your remarks, that'd be great.
Yeah, if we find that we are not equally treating other types of victims, then I think that's a disservice to the public and to the state.
Thank you very much. Representative Kirka.
I think I'll be short. Representative Eastman articulated some of my concerns. A broader concern I have with the original commission is that it was one of the groups that, you know, pushed for SB 91 and did an analysis and thought that was a good idea, and I think it's pretty obvious that was a horrific idea. And I don't see the change that this bill makes are going to rectify that problem in perspective. So I will be a do not pass.
Representative Price Tompkins, Representative Snyder. And I'll just, as the sponsor of the bill, I'll just note that I think part of the support that comes with having the Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault is involved with many member groups that do more than just sexual abuse and domestic violence in their member groups. We have a horrific problem in the state with sexual assault and sexual abuse, particularly in rural Alaska, and I can't imagine a group that would be more appropriate to have on a commission like this to offer that perspective. And with respect to Representative Kirka's comments, the reason I think this bill follows the legislative auditor's analysis of taking out the recommendation function, the commission was created by the legislature to make those recommendations that led to Senate Bill 91 and led to some of their participation, some of the changes, and the decision to not have that recommendation function as part of this commission reflects, I think, some mixed feelings on part of members of the legislature. And so I do think this bill addresses the very concern that Representative Kirka articulates. He may not agree with my perspective, but I did want to share that. With that, may I have a motion?
I move version 32-LS0645-G of HB 183 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no opposition, House Bill 183 moves from committee. We'll start moving over to the next bill, but please sign the paperwork as it comes around. Our second and final order of business today is House Bill 51, Aggravating Factors at Sentencing, sponsored by Representative Josephson. This is the second hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. At this time, we will take up amendments to House Bill 51. I'd like to put on record that Legislative Legal has permission to make any technical and conforming changes to the bill. Our office received 10 amendments to House Bill 51, all from Representative Josephson. From Representative Eastman, I'm sorry. The amendment process will be treated like 4 amendments. The maker of the amendment will move the amendment and speaks to it with a 3-minute time limit. Then we'll take questions, and questions will be limited to 1 minute per question. Then we'll proceed to discussion with each member, limited to 3 minutes. Finally, the maker of the amendment will have 1 minute to wrap up. When we come to an amendment, the mover can either move the amendment or it will be withdrawn. We will not roll amendments to the back. And today I'll begin with amendment number 1 from Representative Eastman. And I would invite, just for simplicity's sake, Representative Josephson, you and your staff would like to come up and sit at the desk. I am sure that there'll be questions about your position as to each of the 10 amendments, so you don't need to go up and back each time. Representative Eastman, amendment number 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It looks to me like there was a typographical error and my amendments were misnumbered, so they are the correct order I have here. If that would help you, I can get you a copy of that.
Representative Eastman, we distributed amendments, and you will start with amendment number 1, or you cannot move the amendment.
All right. I was afraid that had not been inadvertent. The amendments were submitted in order, and I see that they have been renumbered not in order.
Representative Eastman, these amendments came with A1, A2, A3, A4, A5, and they have been provided to the committee consistent with A1, A2, A3, A4, A5. Do you want to move amendment number 1 or not?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to
send me Mr. Chair.
The following documents. I have the documents here of the order in which the amendments were.
Representative Eastman, you can either move amendment number 1 or we won't hear it. What's your decision?
I'd like to staff to give this to the committee chairman, please. Mr. Chairman, I'd also like the staff to distribute to members.
Mr. Representative Eastman, you have one choice. You can move amendment number one or we won't hear it.
Mr. Chairman, after extensive consultation with our legal attorneys, they advised me of the following portions of our rules which would be violated by the requirement you are trying to implement.
We'll be at
I do not.
Back on record. So, Representative Eastman, you have provided some excerpts from Mason's manual. You want to make whatever point? I'll give you 3 minutes to make whatever point you'd like to make.
Certainly. Thank you.
I would suggest you make that in the form of a motion.
All right. I'm not aware of a motion to be made other than I do intend to provide amendments to the committee. I proposed them to the committee and submitted them to the committee in the order in which they need to be presented, and that is certainly my intent. The rules before you, which certainly we can contact the attorneys if you'd like to bring them into the conversation, but I think it's fairly clear that amendments are in order at this particular time, and so I will be making some amendments. I don't promise to make all 10 amendments because I reserve the right not to, but in the event that we do go through all 10 amendments, it's important to recognize that we do have rules of parliamentary procedure which dictate the order in which amendments are to be presented. And you can see here, the First Amendment proposed will be the First Amendment considered, Section 397, and in Section 156, a motion is order when it's presented in appropriate time, violates no rule, and is not clearly dilatory, which in this case, none of these amendments are. Certainly, 155 is also important, same purpose. A motion may ordinarily be presented any time when the motion can be acted upon, which now is the time to act upon amendments. And certainly, it's good to remind that the duties of the head of a committee or the head of the floor, the presiding officer, are to recognize members entitled to the floor and to state and put to vote all questions that are regularly moved. Each of these are regular amendments. They're all fairly short. They're all just a couple of words, with the exception of one, which is, I think, about two sentences. So there should be no time wasted in going through these for the fact that they're long or unnecessarily burdensome. And then also at the end, it's just a reminder to the committee that the officer should never rule an amendment out of order unless certain that it is. And so in this case, these all are very pertinent to the issue. And so should be considered at this time. You know, in in this setting. There was once, not too long ago, some of us may remember, where there was an attempt by me to put forward an amendment, and the committee chair at that time decided that they didn't want to, and then the bill went out, and then a short while later, the bill came back to the committee so that we could tend to that amendment, because it is the right of any of us as a member of this committee on behalf of the people of Alaska to put forward an amendment. That's chronicled here in Section 155. One of the fundamental rights of a member is the right to present any proper proposal for consideration of the body. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Isom. How long have you served on this committee?
On this committee, this is going to be my sixth year.
And have I been chair of the committee that entire time?
You have.
Are you familiar with the practice of this committee during the entire time I've been chair to put amendments in order and take them up in that particular order?
Yes, and that's why they were submitted to you in the order in which they will be presented.
Just a minute. But you're fully aware of the practice of this committee to number the amendments and have my staff number those and present them to the committee in that order and take them up in that order. And that's been the practice of the committee for a long time.
The committee should be attending to them in the order in which they were submitted. I am not a member of your party. I don't represent your district. The order in which I am presenting them reflects the order in which my party and my district want these orders.
So my simple question is, you were familiar with the practice of this committee for years, as I've been chair, correct?
Certainly.
And can you show me any email that you sent to my office yesterday with these 10 amendments in which you requested a specific order that we present them?
Yes, the emails all together right here.
Do any of those say, this is the First Amendment I would like heard?
Yes, the very first.
Can you show me where it says it in that email? Pass it up.
Email
here.
For Amendment 8.7 sent to you at 4:20.
What does it say on the text of the email?
It says, please find the attached amendment for Health Bill 51.
Does it say, I'd like to hear this first?
That is you talk about the custom in which we've done things. We've done things in the way in which they are submitted to you. That is the way in which we deal with them. That is how I'm doing this. There was no confusion. Had I sent you an email with a lot of amendments all together at the same time, then maybe it was at your discretion.
Representative,
not offering that discretion.
Representative Eason, I can understand that whatever you're doing in your office, but I can assure you what we have always done is put the amendments in particular order in the office, which may or may not have been the order that was received. And if you had requested an order in your emails and said, this is the order I'd like to have my amendments heard, we would have taken that under consideration. You did not make that request in any of the 7 emails.
So what order would you like them to be?
The order that's right in front of you. You can move amendments.
And what order does this reflect other than your political agenda?
Representative Eason, we're not going to impugn members of any member of this body, including myself.
I'm asking for a rationale for why you have reordered my amendments.
What you just said is impugning my motives.
I'm asking for a motive. Please explain a motive, any rationale for why you have renumbered my amendments.
Representative Bryce Tompkins.
Thank you. Representative Eastman, I don't understand where you're going with this. The First Amendment is 8.1. The second is 8.2. That seems to me like a pretty logical order. And I think the chair just asked, did you request a specific order? Very unusual for you, you did not directly answer that question, which suggests to me you didn't request a specific order. We have 10 amendments in front of us. They're in order per legislative legal. I think that's the rational answer to the question that you asked.
And that is the answer. We took it, a 1
Thank
through
you.
10. That's what I said earlier before we went down this path. So I'll get back to the same place. We are at amendment number 1, your choice. Either move it or we're not going to hear it.
So you're saying that the way the amendments came back from the legislature to the legislature from our legislative legal services is the order in which you want to have them presented. Because that is not the way they were requested. That simply deals with the priorities of the legislature as through our attorneys working on various.
Representative Eastman, this is your choice. You can move amendment number 1 or not. Do you want to move amendment number 1?
I move amendment 8.7.
Okay, I'm going to take that as amendment number 1 has not been moved, so that amendment is denied. Representative Eason, you'd like to move amendment number 2.
I am moving amendment 8.7. I am asking to be recognized by the chair.
Amendment number 2 is not going to be considered.
It is my
Would you
right
like to
be
move amendment number 3?
An amendment. You are denying my right and the right of my constituents to move this amendment.
No, you're perfectly capable of moving either of the amendments that I have just offered and you've declined. Would you like to move amendment number 3?
That is not the discretion that the chair has. I appeal the ruling of the chair.
Okay. There's been an appeal of the chair's ruling. The question is, should the ruling of the chair be sustained? Please call the roll.
Representative Kirka?
Nay.
Representative Vance?
No.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Snyder?
Yes.
Representative Price Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Eastman?
No.
Chair Clayman?
Yes.
Four yeas, three nays.
By a vote of 4-3, the ruling of the chair has been sustained. Would you like to move amendment number 3?
Actually, we're still at amendment number 2, Mr. Committee
no,
Chair.
Actually, I've already moved past amendment number 2. If you'd like to go back to amendment number 1, I'll give you a second chance.
Under protest, I will move amendment number 1.
Is there objection?
Object. Yeah.
Representative Eastman, please tell us about amendment number 1.
Mr. Chairman, I had hoped not to make this amendment. I think the only reason I would be making an amendment like this at the time is if the committee is not able to reach any other consensus on some of the other items up for discussion here in a moment. But if we are assuming that there will be no consensus from the committee that there is no means of coming together on this, then I would ask that we consider the fact that Section 1, dealing with subsection 22, be repealed entirely. So the amendment here is, instead of adding words to this section of law, which the bill currently does as drafted, it would simply remove the entire section, which is dealing with increased aggravating factors for sentencing, and would make the entire topic a moot point at that.
Any questions regarding amendment number 1? Mr. Representative Josephson, what's your position on amendment number 1?
I oppose it in the strongest terms. It would, for example, allow someone to intentionally hurt another who was disabled or who was in, for example, a minority faith or a majority faith, and do so with impunity. It would join us with only 3 other states. So we would leave a group of 47 states to join a group of 3 states. Thank you.
Further comments or questions with regard to amendment number 1? Representative Kirka.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, on your statement just now, you said with impunity. My understanding, this statute that we're looking at and your bill amends, is to add aggravating factors for increased minimum sentencing. Is that correct? And so how is it that those crimes would have impunity?
Well, through the chair, Representative Kirk, I think it's fairly straightforward. A person could target one of the listed cohorts and do so openly and transparently, and the judge would just watch that happen and be obligated to give a presumptive sentence unless there were other aggravators.
Follow-up? Any other questions, Representative Eastman?
Just to build on that, Mr. Chairman. So I just wanted to go back, and for the record, the bill right now doesn't criminalize any kind of new conduct. It just leaves the current criminal conduct criminal and doesn't touch that. Am I still correct in that understanding?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, you asked me that exact question last week, or earlier this week, and last week, and the answer is still yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments with regard to amendment number 1? Representative Eastman, you have 1 minute wrap-up on amendment number 1.
Thank you. I appreciate the, for the record, clarification a moment ago. This amendment and this bill isn't criminalizing any new conduct. It's not, in that sense, you know, creating a new crime or getting rid of any old crime, but the amendment does acknowledge that simply, you know, locking people up for longer isn't necessarily a solution that's going to help anyone. And so the amendment is offered in that context of, let's leave the laws the way they are. Let's not change the what's wrong or what's criminal. The conduct remains the same. But to say that we should be issuing harsher sentences for these things is, I don't know that it's necessarily borne out by the data. So that's all I have to say. With that, I will withdraw amendment number one.
Amendment number one is withdrawn. Now we come to amendment number two. Representative Easton, would you like to move amendment number two?
I will move amendment two.
Object.
Representative Eastman, it's been objected to. Please tell us about amendment number two.
Thank you. And it's unfortunate, I think, that we've come to this place in our national dialogue. But it is certainly the case that being able to freely express one's political positions, to affiliate with political organizations, political candidates, and so forth, whereas historically I think that's been recognized as an American freedom, which should not in any way be punished or penalized or sanctioned or coerced to change one's opinion. I think at the national level we're seeing examples both from one party to another and then back again that indicate that political affiliation is something for which someone can be retaliated against now. And so in that spirit, I believe that protecting someone's right to free speech, including political affiliation, should be protected. And it should be protected alongside some of these other protections, protections against racism and sexism and so forth. So it's in that spirit that I offer this amendment.
Questions about amendment number two? Representative Kirka.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Representative Josephson, in committee, when we heard this bill last week, as you mentioned, we heard the heartbreaking testimony of one of the victims that this bill is trying to rectify the problem. It seemed to me that the nature of the threats, the nature of the hate, if you will, could be associated more with the, I think political activism might be the right term, of the individual, and not so much with the other group identity necessarily. And because there are many individuals who have that same identity who aren't regularly attacked. And there was questions, and there might be other amendments in the future on this, on the question of creed, and does that apply to political affiliation or political ideology? And we reached out to legal, my office did, and it could be construed that way, but it wasn't abundantly clear. No, more traditionally, creed is more traditionally associated with religion.
You're kind of well past the minute. You got to get a question out.
So I guess my question is, was there any abundantly clear evidence that it was not associated with the individual's political activism, so to speak, on this issue, rather than just her identity, in terms of the hate and the attack?
The chair, Representative Kirka, there were three attacks, arguably. One was violent. All three were sort of violent. One was physically violent, maybe two. And I don't agree with your statement or suggestion in the slightest. The political activism apparently was her wanting to organize a pride parade or picnic in June. That's related to her status as a member of the LGBT community. I'm sorry that I can't agree with you. I completely disagree with you.
Follow up, or I'm not sure you're going to get much. You're certainly welcome.
No, we disagree. So I didn't see any strong, clear evidence that to support the other notion, but sometimes you disagree.
Further questions with regard to amendment number two? Representative Vance, I wasn't sure at first whether you were raising your pen for a question or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kirka's questions just make me wonder if in this particular circumstance, if someone who does not identify as anyone from the LGBTQ community could be politically active in organizing an event, a pride event, who definitely wants to aid in getting awareness and things like that. Is there any evidence that those individuals who have been a part of that community and supportive have received any similar discrimination? I think that's, if I understand what Representative Kirk is asking, is if that could be, if there's any evidence anywhere else in the nation that someone who is not identifying specifically as an individual but is active in organizing these events been a subject of any crime that this could fall under that category.
Through the chair, Representative Vance, your comment actually supports my position that the connection that was made was to her LGBT status, and that had she been a, quote, straight person, close quote, she would not have been attacked, perhaps. The law would not care whether she genuinely was a member of the LGBT community. It's whether the defendant thought she was. So there's that element as well. I don't know what more I can offer you.
Follow up? Representative Vance?
So my question, I guess maybe there, if just asking if you had heard if there were any circumstances that of a someone not identifying that's active. Obviously, in her case, that wasn't the instance. But I do understand that there could be a perception of what the attacker may have perceived her identity to be an attack on that merit. But it would be interesting to find any data, in that regard, if there were people that would fall under this category as politically activists and being attacked as being maybe a sympathizer. And is there going to be a similar hate crime protection for those individuals because they are choosing to be active politically, if you will, in this regard? But if we have no evidence of that, then obviously that's what we have to go on. So that was initially my question.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, I don't have much more to add. If the evidence was that the defendant knew that the person was sympathetic to the civil rights, for example, of an LGBT member, but was him or herself a, quote, heterosexual person, it would not be a hate crime under this bill. Now, understand, there are 30-some-odd sections. It could be, there could be another aggravator that applies, but not this one.
All right, thank you.
And just... The amendment, in light of Representative Vance, your question, it is, I think, fair to say that this woman who was active in the LGBTQ efforts to raise awareness and equal rights and recognition of that status, which I recognize some people have different views about, they are not a political party. Political affiliation we typically associate with Democrats, Republicans, Alaska Independence Party, a whole bunch of things that, so part of the challenge that this amendment creates is what constitutes political affiliation as opposed to something else. And I think what Representative Josephson is talking about is how the identity that she's tying to is not a political party. It's a perspective on a social issue. But that perspective on the social issue, I think we all know people of different sexual orientations in both the Democratic and Republican Party, as well as independents and just about every other party. And so that this class, the class that he's addressing, is kind of by definition not political affiliation. Representative Josephson may have a different perspective on that. But, Representative Kirk, that got another question.
Yes, I do. And I think
this may be more comments than questions. I know we're
right. I understand. I I do have a question that I think makes my point, but I also see, based upon your comments, the need for a possibly a amendment to this amendment, and that being after the word party, we can insert the words or ideology, political party or ideology. And I don't know if that was the intent of the maker, but I think that would be the intent of where I was going with my question. And I would like to make that that amendment, that motion.
So you want to move to amend amendment number two. Tell me the words that you want to use. You want to say, looking at amendment number two, describe exactly what you want to change in the amendment.
So on the thank you, Mr. Chairman. On line four, I would want to insert, after the first reference to the word party, before comma, we'd put or ideology.
Before or after the comma?
Before the comma.
Okay, anything else that you would change? So it would read, line four would read, affiliation, end quote, includes belonging to a political party or ideology, comma, endorsing a political party, comma, or attending a political event.
And we would insert the same thing after the second word party, before the comma.
So that it would endorsing a political party or ideology, comma.
That's the conceptual amendment. Yes.
So we now have conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two. And I'll first ask Representative Eastman, the short question is, do you support amendment number one to amendment number two?
I think I support the concept. I have a comment.
It's a conceptual amendment, so that's fine. All right. Your comment is to amendment number one to amendment, conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two.
I have no objection, I think, to the spirit of the amendment. But when you say, you know, in the second instance, endorsing a political party or ideology, wouldn't that be large enough to encompass someone belonging to a political ideology? Because in order to belong to the political ideology, they would have to first endorse that political ideology that they belong to, right? I mean, my thought would be that I think you might be able to accomplish everything you're trying to do. Just the second reference alone, you wouldn't need to put it in both places.
That's a question for Representative Kirka.
I concur. So I will withdraw my conceptual amendment and reoffer it. And Representative Eastman,
Wait. You're not withdrawing. You want to modify the amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me how you want to modify the amendment.
Representative Eastman, you're suggesting on the second. Yeah, that makes more sense. I'm looking at it. Sorry, I was in a bit of a rush there. So not scratch the first
Insertion, ideology.
And we'll only do the second insertion.
So it would read now, on line four, would read, affiliation, end quote, includes belonging to a political party, comma, endorsing a political party or ideology, comma, or going to line five, attending a political event. That's now the
structure of
amendment
number one. Yes, that makes more sense. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes.
I have no objection.
Mr. Chairman.
First, let me ask, is there objection to conceptual amendment number one?
I object.
Yeah, there is an objection to amendment number two. Representative Josephson.
Very briefly, the only state I can identify that brings up this concern with politics and protecting the political is the state of Iowa. There's no other state that I can identify that cares. And that's probably because there's no evidence that this is an issue. We put on evidence, granted, second, we didn't have an FBI testifier, but we put on essentially evidence for purposes of the legislature that there is a problem, a serious problem in harm being caused deliberately to members of the LGBT community. It's your committee, it's the seven of yours committee, but the gentlemen haven't put on any evidence.
And I would note, and then Representative Kirk, I'll give you wind up as to amendment number one to amendment number two. I would just note that the language endorsing a political party or ideology, whether it's whether one wants to read that as endorsing an ideology or read that phrase as endorsing a political ideology. Either way, I believe this is something the courts would likely find vague and ambiguous and very difficult to enforce. So for those reasons, I'm unlikely to support the amendment, but I'll give you your one-minute wrap-up on Amendment Number 1 to Amendment Number 2. Amendment Number 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I've experienced on numerous occasions before I joined the legislature discrimination and a lot of hostility and hate because of the ideology I espoused and was actively engaging and organizing for that. Prime example would be actually here in Juneau. I was out front of the Capitol building with some signs pointed at the windows, and certain members of the legislature didn't like those signs, and there was coordination between the judicial branch, the executive branch, and the legislative branch to illegally block the signs and, in fact, remove them from the sidewalk. And there was a free speech violation and a misappropriation for political purposes of state resources, but there was the motivation was I don't like to accuse people of being hateful, but that was it wasn't because they liked what we were doing. And
Representative Kirk, you're at the 1 minute mark. I'll give you just a little bit to wrap up. I think we understand your point, but please.
Right. And I guess my question that I think would clarify the point I was trying to make earlier to the situation was that other members who identified as part of the, you know, who had a sexual orientation or a gender identity that was they were being targeted for, it seems that that is more often the case they're being targeted when they are engaged in a political organizing, so to speak. And I'm using that political organizing in the very broadest sense.
All right. Thank you very much. That brings Amendment Number 2 to Amendment Number 1 to Amendment Number 2 back before the committee. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
Madam Clerk, if you could please call the roll. A yes vote is to add the language to the amendment. A no vote would not add the language to the amendment.
Representative Meekin?
Yes.
Representative Kirka?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Drummond?
No.
Representative Snyder?
No.
Representative Price-Pumpkin?
No.
Chair Clayman?
No.
3 yeas, 4 nays.
So by a vote of 3-4, Amendment Number 1, or Conceptual Amendment Number 1 to Amendment Number 2 has failed to pass the committee. That brings Amendment Number 2 back before us. I think you were making wind-up comments, Representative Kirka, and we went ahead and took that amendment, but we're back in wind-up comments as to Amendment Number 2, and you're back with your time to comment.
Well, I guess if I could answer that question I just posed of in looking at those four instances of crimes being reported.
Representative Kirk, we're not doing, we passed okay. Time for question, but this is closing comments, Amendment Number 2.
All right. Well, closing comments, Amendment Number 2. I support the amendment. I think that I have witnessed far more hate based upon what somebody's political views are than over their sexual orientation or gender identity. And a lot of violence associated with the two. But we don't talk about it. We don't track it.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Yeah. I have a comment that I guess is in the form of a question. I'm in absolute disbelief. Representative Kirka, you were not assaulted and stabbed in the chest in your garage. That is a crime. And what you just described is not even in the same galaxy as the kind of situation. I'm amazed that you didn't offer that proactively in making the case for your amendment. That's my comment.
Representative Snyder.
The legislator, my colleague to the right, hit on the same sentiment of mine. To draw these comparisons it's painful to listen to.
Thank you. I've made my comments. I don't support the amendment, or if I haven't, I don't support the amendment. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
Madam Clerk, if you would please call the roll.
Wrap up, please.
Wrap up. Oh, you're right, Representative Meese. I apologize.
Thank you.
I shouldn't have actually given you a comment period. I should have just given you the wrap up. That's my error, and I apologize for it. Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Again, thank you.
You have your 1 minute wrap up.
So I think there's probably equal sentiments of disbelief coming from both camps represented here today, and since we do have two parties represented here. You know, it surprises me and shocks me to hear that there is, you know, no evidence of some of this kind of violence. I mean, how many pictures do we need to bring in to the committee of people that were assaulted and attacked, bloodied, knocked unconscious, just for the fact that they attended a political event in the last 12 months? And that's not just one party's events. I'm sure that multiple parties are, you know, being targeted. And because this is a heightened issue with real-world calamities and violence, it's important that we recognize these protections alongside others. And that's not to minimize anyone else's experiences or violence done to them.
Representative Eastman, you're at the minute mark. Please conclude.
Yeah, this is just to say that this is also important and should be recognized in our laws.
Thank you. I think the objection is maintained. If you could please call the roll as to amendment number 2.
Representative Price Tonkin?
No.
Representative Eastman?
Yes.
Representative Kirka?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Drummond?
No.
Representative Snyder?
No.
Chair Clayman?
No.
3 yeas, 4 nays.
So by a vote of 3-4, amendment number 2 has failed. The hour is now a little after 3:15, so we're going to adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Friday, January 28th at 1:30 p.m. We will hopefully on Friday return to House Bill 51. If anyone is considering an amendment to House Bill 246, please let our office know and submit those amendments electronically by 5 p.m. on Thursday, January 27th. And for clarity's sake, if you are offering amendments and there is a desired order that you would like your amendments offered, you need to put that in the emails. That if you're going to submit all together or one at a time, there needs to be in that collection of emails a request of the order in which you would like your amendments heard. We will take your requests under consideration, but if there is no specific request asking the order we hear them, we will view that as leaving it to the chair's discretion, the order in which we will present those to the committee. It is my intention to take up amendments to House Bill 246 during our meeting on Friday and then pass the bill out of committee following final questions and discussions. And with that, we will stand adjourned. The time is now 3:18 p.m.